Good morning, happy Mother's Day. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. We have a packed show for you. So much to talk about, so little time to talk about it. We will be joined by Buffalo Common Council member Mitch Nowakowski in just a few seconds. We'll also be joined today by New York State Assemblyman Angelo Morinello, Erie County Clerk Mickey Kearns, and Congressman Tim Kennedy. But let's get started in the city of Buffalo with Buffalo Common Council member Mitch Nowakowski. Mitch, good morning.
Good morning, Beamer. How are you?
Doing all right. Lots going on. And wanted to go on with the budget, but wanted to start with the news that Rite Aid may be closing all of their New York locations, which includes a lot of locations in the city of Buffalo. Now, during the week, having some interviews with pharmacists and people in the pharmacy industry, talking about a possible pharmacy desert in the city. Is this something you've heard about, and your thoughts?
Yes, it's actually really concerning on a lot of levels. So the first is that, look, you know, to have a healthy and sustainable neighborhood and society, people rely on prescriptions. So for you to not be able to get your script, you know, in the city of Buffalo, where we have a ton of Rite Aids, sets back my district. And especially when you think about the Rite Aid at the corner of Broadway and Bailey. And so that serviced one of the most impoverished neighborhoods. And then, you know, insult to injury, now think about the sheer amount of volume of vacant Rite Aids as structures just sitting there vacant, banded, and blighted. So I have questions on a lot of levels, in the sense of, so can we get in, you know, another operator in? If Rite Aid sells, are they going to sell it to another pharmacy that will then take over those leases and provide service to residents and to the city? And then if they don't, then what are their plans for their portfolio of buildings to not just sit there vacant and abandoned? And these are, you know, look, I critique a lot on our built environment. I mean, I don't look at a Rite Aid as a structure and say, well, this is beautiful. It's built to the street. There's parking in the back. There's great lighting. I mean, these are really awkward buildings that no matter if you adapt or reuse, you know you're in a Rite Aid. But then when you think about it, you know, think about seniors, think about people living with disabilities, the vulnerable that rely on prescriptions every single day.
Yeah, for sure. And as you said, I mean, those buildings, there was a Spirit Halloween store in the Rite Aid down the street, and you could still tell, oh, this used to be an Eckerd and then a Rite Aid. I'm hoping, like I'm sure you are, that it sells to another pharmacy and keep them in business. That would be obviously the best outcome for not only the city of Buffalo, but for Western New York.
Yeah, and it's super important because that's what you want first. You want services first. You want to be able to provide people to go to a pharmacy for a variety of needs. And when you think about, you know, people operating their lives, their daily lives, especially with their families, it relies on pharmacies. It's as important as having a hospital and other amenities to build up neighborhoods.
For sure, and obviously this is a story that we'll continue to follow in the next few weeks. The budget, as we'll be talking about later in the show with Assemblyman Angelo Morinello at the state level, a few key things in that budget for the city of Buffalo that you and I have talked about, including the parking garages. How do you understand it, and where do we go from here now that that portion of the state budget is passed?
Yes, yeah, so we have some now, you know, hardcore commitments from New York State as the city of Buffalo deliberates disposing of the mayor's proposed budget. And so we did in the Finance Committee on Tuesday, we had the Buffalo Fiscal Stability Authority, which is really in a soft status, but residents in the city of Buffalo do pay for them to be a state authority to provide the city advice. In an advisory capacity, but we had the secretary of the board, Fred Floss, who's an Buff State economics professor, who's, you know, economist by trade. And, you know, when I first asked him, look, you know, are we looking at the stability authority to be in a hard status, which would then have that authority freeze wages, make cuts, set the tax rate, and really have you know, power to be able to do those things because we're facing a budget crisis. But he said, no, that we can do things to help get us out here in the long term. So we have the parking ramps. We have Sean Ryan's proposal for deficit bonds. And then we have the hotel bed tax in the city of Buffalo. Those three proposals that have to work their way through legislatively, get passed, and then start the mechanisms of setting them up. But the fact is that I still, hold apprehensions because I have not seen hardcore data that, what are these ramps worth? What's the expense at them? Does having a lack of a downtown resurgence and the lack of density, does that make those ramps not as worthy? And will that then have bondholders saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to pay this amount of much, a money for ramps because they might not be worth that because the demand isn't there, because urban cores are hemorrhaging office workers and to the tune of, 25,000 in the city of Buffalo. And then, we have the questions of, okay, if these proposals go through and implemented, when can we actually see cash to be able to balance our budget and the deficit? So right now we have a couple weeks per the city charter to come up with amendments and submit amendments to the Mayor Scanlon's proposed budget by the end of May. And if we don't have any amendments, then we either hold a vote to adopt the budget. But if we don't adopt the budget or don't produce any amendments and the council does nothing, then that means the Mayor Scanlon's budget stands as is with no revisions or amendments. So, for me as the finance chair, I've said it, during committee that I really want to see a gap plan. So does the BFSA. We want to see if that these monies don't come in or materialize in a fiscal year. What does that look like? What cuts can we see and from where? And then ultimately, I think that, this budget deficit and really the crisis that we have in the city of Buffalo isn't going to get solved right now, right when we dispose the budget and we hold a vote. I mean, this is something that it's going to take us years to get out of and to address. And, Secretary Fred Foss and I agree in the sense of that it's going to take Sean Ryan's proposal. It's going to take the, potential parking ramp sale, a hotel bed tax, and then aligned with cuts to restructure our budget totally.
To the parking garages, you talked about the data that you want to see. Have you guys seen any number on what kind of revenue those bring in today for the city of Buffalo?
We've seen, preliminary data from BCAR on what they think that we can produce. And that's the analysis I want to see, Beamer, is can someone show me an appraisal that the Osberger ramp is worth X and that there's, X amount of work that needs to get done? Because those are all factors to show the worth of those ramps. And then ultimately, if someone purchases a ramp and then they invest the money to purchase it, but then invest the money to then rehab it and bring it up to code and take care of that, then how much are you charging per space? And is the demand there to purchase the space for that amount of money? So that's the analysis that we really want to see. And, the administration has, been confident in saying that they do have that analysis, but I'm really looking forward to seeing, that hardcore data. And then ultimately, how long did it take to set up a public authority and get bonds out? And, does that take 8 to 12 months? Because our fiscal year starts from July to July. So when can we expect that revenue to hit city coffers to fill in, right now, $30 million that account for the hotel bed tax and the parking ramp as revenue, because the council does not have any authority to set the revenue, only the mayor does. We can cut and move and produce amendments. So, to me, I'm looking at, where does that affect our cash flow in order to make payroll? I understand that we share a bank account with the Buffalo Public Schools, so our commissioner of finance said that we wouldn't have to worry about cash flow, but these are the hardcore data numbers that the council needs to see.
Mitch, you talked about the hotel bed tax. I have a question on that before we get to Sean Ryan's plan. You said if the budget will pass, if there's no suggestions, no amendments made to it. So let's just assume the budget passes. When will we see that tax put on to hotels in the city? How quick will that translate to seeing the 3% tax and seeing the income for the city of Buffalo?
That's a good question. We haven't necessarily got a timeline, but if it's legislatively passed in the state budget, that means it's the law of the state of New York upon the governor's signature. So that's when that tax can then be collected. And, we're projecting about, it would be about $3.5 million in the city of Buffalo from that hotel bed tax. And, you know, and I understand that that's a polarizing issue and people, you know, feel a certain type of way about it. And, but, you know, to talk real straight here, Beamer, is I have never not booked a hotel because there was a small fee attached to it. I mean, if you're going to travel there, you're going to stay at that hotel. And think about, you know, Kleinhans, Shays, and think about all of our amenities and our festivals and in the town ballroom. And people are staying in our city. And, you know, that costs money to be able to provide those services for overtime, sewer, lighting, infrastructure, inspections. You know, that comes at a cost to the city of Buffalo. So we have to make sure that, you know, if people are staying in our city, that we can collect enough revenue to then provide service to keep people safe and to keep people coming to our city.
Yeah, I was thinking that you guys are probably eyeing next March for the tournament as a big one for that bed tax.
Yeah, and you know, think about it. You know, we have overtime costs, and you know, for police and fire, and you know, we have to provide EMS for large scale events, and you know, that's the one thing that's coming under scrutiny. You know, from certain council members, and they're saying, well, look, you know, the overtime is really expensive for the Buffalo police and fire. And the first thing is, you know, a lot of that overtime is contractual. So if we're going to address it, we would have to address it in the upcoming bargaining agreements between the unions and City Hall. And then ultimately, we have to see, well, where is that overtime deriving it? Is it coming from special events? Is it coming from quality of life calls? What's driving that? And ultimately, to be able to provide that service, we need revenue.
Now, to Senator Sean Ryan's plan, which, as I understand it, is to borrow the money to pass this budget or to get out of the hole that the city is in, do you fear that's just pushing the problem down the street?
So that's a good question. So here's my long-term plan. I think that there is some credibility to Senator Ryan's plan that needs to be examined, and that is for the sheer fact that to be able to right-size government and to have revenues match expenditures, we're going to have as many tools on the table to be able to address it, because I don't see us just saying, oh, we're selling parking ramps, we're getting hotel bed tax, and there's no cuts, and we're out of the hole here. That's not going to happen, because our budget naturally will grow, because we're going to have to, you know, provide, you know, raises or contractual raises, because we're negotiating, you know, union contracts. There's going to be, you know, we could be hit with a storm. We can need more equipment. You know, the cost to be able to provide services for a healthy municipality is always going to naturally rise as we want to invest in our city. So to be able to correct our budget is going to be 3 to 4 years out. So there might be, you know, an option for deficit bonds to play not to the tune of $50 million, but maybe a role in a long-term four-year plan to straighten out our city finances, because there's no silver bullet here. There's not one proposal that we could say, oh, that fixed it, we're moving on. I mean, that's just not real. And, you know, what is real is that we need as many options on the table to be able to take a short-term approach to meet our expenses, but then a long-term approach on how we structurally fix our budget.
You know, Mitch, a lot of things are, you know, money coming into Buffalo, right? And the lost revenue with downtown specifically seeing so many less people since the pandemic. Anything that you're seeing in the city that more people are starting to go downtown? That I know all those jobs were added with Ingram Micro, which I don't think has officially, you know, it's happening, but I don't think the move has happened yet. Any indicators that there's more like that to bring the people downtown to kind of kickstart the economy back up?
Well, so that's a really good question. So, you know, and I was talking, I was at a coffee shop at Public Espresso, and I was meeting with Buffalo Place, and we were talking about downtown economics. And, you know, M&T Bank is a large, large employer in the city of Buffalo. And, you know, when I talked to those shop owners downtown, once M&T during, you know, after COVID had started bringing people in to work more of a hybrid model, we saw our economy change, and we saw a slight improvement, more than a slight improvement. So I think that if you adapt, you're going to always see, you know, you're going to see pluses and minuses. So I have seen some, you know, signals of people saying, wait a minute, we want to come to the city of Buffalo. And, you know, we understand that we need to have density, but I'm being, you know, really optimistic where I'm seeing the most amount of movement so far is residential density. So there is, it will be, you know, announced soon that there's a building in the urban core on Pearl Street that right now is just has a restaurant on the bottom and it's vacant on top. And, you know, I met with a developer who's, you know, potentially going to put 33 units in a beautiful historic building on Pearl Street. And so that's where we're starting to see some of those gains. And then ultimately, when we see venues, like if we see a strong Chippewa, we see a strong Allen Street, we see a strong downtown, and we see events and venues and people coming up with large-scale events, we start seeing that vibrancy come back. So, you know, to bring back downtown, we're all going to have to adapt to new times and to new things. But I'm feeling positive, and I am really happy that, you know, Ingram Micro, which is a very identifiable Buffalo employer coming to downtown Buffalo, will help kickstart part of the economy.
Mitch, you talked about, you know, this on top of cuts that are going to have to be made. I know we've talked about this in the past, but any specific cuts that you're looking at that you hope to see maybe this year or in the next few years, as you said, on this 3 to 4 year approach?
Well, so that's a really good that's a good focal point in the sense of that, you know, I even said during committee, I'll land on the sword and explain that, you know, there might be, you know, there could be, if we don't make the cuts, I fear that someone could do it for us. And that instead of using a scalpel to make cuts, that we have to take a machete because we haven't, you know, we haven't right-sized us yet. So, I mean, think about it, you know, there was a proposal to move recycling every other week. There was a proposal to eliminate one bulk trash, which costs about, you know, $800 to $1 million a year and only going to one. There's been talk about inside City Hall that says, well, the mayor's summer youth right now goes to ages 21. Maybe it's lowered to, you know, 18, 19 year olds in order to, you know, have a smaller pool. And, you know, currently, but then think about that, you know, we want our kids, you know, off the street and employed and in helping nonprofits. So those are some of the cuts that people are talking about in City Hall. And that's not fun and no one wants to see it. But ultimately, we have to come in, you know, and really examine this because we need to provide health and safety services like police, fire, infrastructure. We have to be able to meet our obligations so that, you know, we don't, you know, go into a hard control board status and you know, put a complete freeze on everything. And, you know, that's what's so nuanced about all of this is the fact is that, you know, when we look at a workforce to provide services, we want the city of Buffalo to be a desirable place to work so that we have really good, you know, DPW workers. We have really good, you know, police officers and firefighters and people who, you know, take care of the needs of the city every single day. And oftentimes when people are sleeping to keep us safe. So, you know, there's a large way of looking at this, but, you know, that's what I've been hearing so far.
Two projects I just want an update on, the Cobblestone and Heritage Point.
So for Heritage Point, I did speak to a Sinatra representative and the Canal Harbor Association that did state that they are close to closing on other parts of financing that, you know, within probably, you know, 60 days, we could see a closing of that and then see construction start. And then in Cobblestone, since the city of Buffalo did win a huge court case that said that the city, you know, acted appropriately by taking 110, 118 South Park into eminent domain. So right now we're examining what that transfer, that title transfer looks like in state Supreme Court. And then ultimately it is emergency stabilized from Carmina Woods Morris, who provided the work. And then once we get that title, that's when we can start quickly moving on RFPing that structure out for it to be adaptively reused. And a lot of those conversations are happening behind the scenes in City Hall about, you know, what does this look like? You know, if we, you know, if a court, you know, makes a decision one day on a Tuesday, then what does Wednesday look like? So a lot of those mechanics are starting to come together.
Mitch, my final question. Mitch Nowakowski, he's a common council member. He was also a delegate in the 2024 election. We talked to, he was our representative, our man on the street at the DNC over the summer. Mitch, you know, a lot's coming out now in these books about former President Biden, the final year, obviously the debate. When you go back, is there something that you think the Democratic Party should have done differently, and what lessons do you hope the Democrat Party learned in the 2024 election?
Well, we have to learn a lot of lessons, and the main lesson is you know, when you look at the final result of the presidential election, a lot of people sat home, and when people sit home, that oftentimes means that Democrats, you know, lose races. So I think that the first is how do we open up this tent and start engaging people who are, you know, are working people, who are trying to put food on the table, who are trying to get, you know, back to work, and not get so caught up in culture wars and TikTok and Instagram reels and have everything reduced to, you know, identity and identity politics. How do we build a party for everybody and include everybody and make them feel welcome in the party? So I think that that's what we really have to start engaging and you know, we have to look inward, you know. Look at the top brass of the Democratic Party. You know, it's an aging party. We need young people to step up and be good candidates and you know, start engaging voters that oftentimes are either coming of age to vote or are disengaged or maybe, you know, not affiliated with the Democratic Party, which is really interesting, Beamer, because when you talk to Gen Z, they don't really identify with a party. They don't. You know, some of them are blanks or they call themselves independents. So how do we engage those folks to say, hey, the Democratic Party is for you? And look, you know, the debate was, it was tough to watch. And I think it was a turning point to a lot of people that said, wait a minute, we our candidate who's serving, you know, honorably as president and where we stand by some of the things that he's been able to accomplish. You know, I think that was that woke up the Democratic Party, and that's ultimately where you saw the change for Vice President Harris. But it's something where we have to look inward on how we could advance our party moving forward by bringing everybody in the tent.
Buffalo Common Council member Mitch Nowakowski. As always, Mitch, thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
Thanks, Beamer.
And that was Buffalo Common Council member Mitch Nowakowski. When we come back, we'll be talking with New York State Assemblyman Angelo Morinello. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.